gods, said Didactylos half to himself. He pulled out another scroll. You want to know about gods? Here's Zeno's Reflections, and old Aristocrates' Platitudes, and Ibid's Bloody Stupid Discourses, and Legibus' Geometries, and Hierarch's Theologies. Didactylos' fingers danced across the racks. More dust filled the air. These are all books, said Brother. Oh, yes, everyone writes them here. You just can't stop the buggers. And people can read them, said Brother. Omnia was based on one book, and here were hundreds. Well, they can if they want, said Urn, but no one comes in here much. These aren't books for reading, they're more for writing. Wisdom of the ages, this, said Didactylos. Got to write a book, see, to prove you're a philosopher. Then you get your scroll and free official philosopher's loofah. The sunlight pooled on a big stone table in the centre of the room. Urn unrolled a length of scroll. Brilliant flowers glowed in the golden light. Orangecrates on the nature of plants, said Didactylos. 600 plants and their uses. They're beautiful, whispered Brother. Yes, that is one of the uses of plants, said Didactylos, and one which old Orangecrates neglected to notice too. Well done. Show him Philo's bestiary, Urn. Another scroll unrolled. There were dozens of pictures of animals, thousands of unreadable words. But pictures of animals? It's wrong. Well, isn't it wrong to...
Pictures of just about everything in here, said Didactylos.
Art was not permitted in Omnia.
And this is the book Didactylos wrote, said Urn.
Brother looked down at a picture of a turtle. There were elephants. They're elephants. His memory supplied from the fresh memories of the bestiary sinking indelibly into his mind. Elephants on its back, and on them something with mountains and a waterfall of an ocean around its edge.
How can this be? Said Brother. A world on the back of a tortoise? Why does everyone tell me this? This can't be true.
Tell that to the mariners, said Didactylos. Everyone who's ever sailed the rim ocean knows it. Why deny the obvious?
But surely the world is a perfect sphere, spinning about the sphere of the sun, just as the Septuagint tells us, said Brother.
That seems so logical. That's how things ought to be.
Ought, said Didactylos.
Well, I don't know about ought. That's not a philosophical word.
And what is this? Brother murmured, pointing to a circle under the drawing of the turtle.
That's a plan view, said Urn.
Map of the world, said Didactylos.
Map? What's a map?
It's a sort of picture that shows you where you are, said Didactylos.
Brother stared in wonderment.
And how does it know?
Gods, prompted Om again. We are here to ask about gods.
But is all this true? Said Brother.
Didactylos shrugged.
Could be, could be. We are here, and it is now. The way I see it is. After that, everything tends towards guesswork.
You mean you don't know it's true? Said Brother.
I think it might be, said Didactylos. I could be wrong. Not being certain is what being a philosopher is all about.
Talk about gods, said Om.
Gods, said Brother weakly. His mind was on fire. These people made all these books about things, and they weren't sure. But he'd been sure, and Brother Numrod had been sure, and Deacon Vorbis had a sureness you could bend horseshoes around. Sureness was a rock. Now he knew why. When Vorbis spoke about Ephib, his face was grey with hatred and his voice was tense as a wire. If there was no truth, what was there left? And these bumbling old men spent their time kicking away the pillars of the world, and they'd nothing to replace them with but uncertainty. And they were proud of this? Urn was standing on a small ladder, fishing among the shelves of scrolls. Didactylos sat opposite Brother, his blind gaze still apparently fixed on him.
You don't like it, do you? Said the philosopher.
Brother had said nothing.
You know, said Didactylos conversationally, people will tell you that us blind people are the real business where the other senses are concerned. But it's not true, of course. The buggers just say it because it makes them feel better. It gets rid of the obligation to feel sorry for us. But when you can't see, you do learn to listen more. The way people breathe. The sounds their clothes make. Erne reappeared with another scroll. You shouldn't do this, said Brother wretchedly, all this. His voice trailed off. I know about sureness, said Didactylos. Now the light irascible tone had drained out of his voice. I remember, before I was blind, I went to Omnia once. This was before the borders were closed, when you still let people travel. And in your citadel, I saw a crowd stoning a man to death in a pit. Ever seen that? It has to be done, Brother mumbled, so the soul can be shriven, and... I don't know about the soul. Never been that kind of a philosopher, said Didactylos. All I know is it was a horrible sight. The state of the body is not... Oh, I'm not talking about the poor bugger in the pit, said the philosopher. I'm talking about the people throwing the stones. They were sure, all right. They were sure it wasn't them in the pit. You could see it in their faces. So glad it wasn't them that they were throwing just as hard as they could. Erne hovered, looking uncertain. I've got Abraxas's on religion, he said. Old charcoal Abraxas, said Didactylos, suddenly cheerful again. Struck by lightning 15 times so far and still not giving up. You can borrow this one overnight if you want. No scribbling comments in the margins, mind you, unless they're interesting.
This is it, said Om. Come on, let's leave this idiot.
Brother unrolled the scroll. There weren't even any pictures. Crabbed writing filled it, line after line.
He spent years researching it, said Didactylos. Went out into the desert, talked to the small gods, talked to some of our gods too. Brave man. He says gods like to see an atheist around, gives them something to aim at.
Brother unrolled a bit more of the scroll. 5 minutes ago, he would have admitted that he couldn't read. Now, the best efforts of the Inquisitors couldn't have forced it out of him. He held it up in what he hoped was a familiar fashion. "Where is he now?" he said.
"Well, someone said they saw a pair of sandals with smoke coming out just outside his house a year or two back," said Didactylos. "He might have, you know, pushed his luck."
"I think," said Brother, "that I'd better be going. I'm sorry to have intruded on your time."
"Bring it back when you're finished with it," said Didactylos.
"Is that how people read in Omnia?" said Erne.
"What?"
"Upside down?" Brother picked up the tortoise, glared at Erne, and strode as haughtily as possible out of the library.
"Hmm," said Didactylos.
He drummed his fingers on the tables.
"It was him I saw in the tavern last night," said Erne. "I'm sure, master.
But the Omnians are staying here in the palace."
"That's right, master."
"But the tavern is outside."
"Yes."
"Then he must have flown over the wall, do you think?"
"I'm sure it was him, master."
"Then maybe he came later. Maybe he hadn't gone in when you saw him."
"It can only be that, master. The capers of the labyrinth are unbribable."
Didactylos clipped Erne across the back of the head with his lantern.
"Stupid boy! I've told you about that sort of statement."
"I mean, they are not easily bribable, master. Not for all the gold in Omnia, for example."
"Eh, that's more like it."
"Do you think that tortoise was a god, master?"
"He's going to be in big trouble in Omnia if he is. They've got a bastard of a god there. Do you ever read old Abraxas?"
"No, master."
"Very big on gods. Big gods, man. Always smelled of burnt hair. Naturally resistant."
Om crawled slowly along the length of a line.
"Stop walking up and down like that," he said. "I can't concentrate."
"How can people talk like that?" Brother asked the empty air, acting as if they're glad they don't know things, finding out more and more things they don't know. It's like children proudly coming to show you a full potty.
Om marked his place with a claw.
"But they find things out," he said. "This Abraxas was a thinker and no mistake. I didn't know some of this stuff. Sit down!"
Brother obeyed.
"Right," said Om. "Now, listen. Do you know how gods get power?"
"By people believing in them," said Brother. "Millions of people believe in you." Om hesitated. "All right, all right. We are here, and it is now. Sooner or later he'll find out for himself."
"They don't believe," said Om.
"But it's happened before," said the tortoise, "dozens of times. Do you know Abraxas found the lost city of E?
Very strange carvings, he says. Belief, he says, belief shifts. People start out believing in the god and end up believing in the structure."
"I don't understand," said Brother.
"Let me put it another way," said the tortoise. "I am your god, right?"
"Yes."
"And you'll obey me?"
"Yes."
"Good. Now, take a rock and go and kill Vorbis."
Brother didn't move.
"I'm sure you heard me," said Om.
"But he's... the Quisition would..."
"Now you know what I mean," said the tortoise. "You're more afraid of him than you are of me. Now, Abraxas says here, around the god there forms a shell of prayers and ceremonies and buildings and priests and authority, until at last the god dies, and this may not be noticed."
"That can't be true."
"I think it is. Abraxas says there's a kind of shellfish that lives in the same way. It makes a bigger and bigger shell until it can't move around anymore and it dies."
That means the whole church?"
"Yes."
Brother tried to keep hold of the idea, but the sheer enormity of it kept wrenching it from his mental grasp. "But you're not dead," he managed.
"Next best thing," said Om. "And you know what? No other small god is trying to usurp me. Did I ever tell you about old Ur-Gilash? No? He was the god back in what's now Omnia before me. Not much of one. Basically a weather god or a snake god. Something, anyway. It took years to get rid of him, though. Wars and everything. So, I've been thinking..."
Brother said nothing.
"Om still exists," said the tortoise. "I mean, the shell. All you'd have to do is get people to understand."
Brother still said nothing.
"You can be the next prophet," said Om.
"I can't. Everyone knows Vorbis will be the next prophet."
"Ah, but you will be official."
"No."
"No? I am your god.
And I am my me. I'm not a prophet. I can't even write. I can't read. No one will listen to me." Om looked him up and down.
"I must admit you're not the chosen one I would have chosen," he said.
"The great prophets had vision," said Brother. Even if you didn't talk to them, they had something to say. What could I say? I haven't got anything to say to anyone. What could I say?"
"Believe in the great god Om," said the tortoise.
"Well, and then what?"
"What do you mean, and then what?"
Brother looked out glumly at the darkening courtyard. "Believe in the great god Om, or be stricken with thunderbolts," he said.
"Sounds good to me."
"Is that how it always has to be?" The last rays of the sun glinted off the statue in the centre of the courtyard. It was vaguely feminine. There was a penguin perched on one shoulder. "Patina, goddess of wisdom," said Brother. "The one with the penguin." "Why a penguin?"
"Can't imagine," said Om hurriedly.
"Nothing wise about penguins, is there?"
"Shouldn't think so, unless you count the fact that you don't get them in Omnia. Pretty wise of them." "Brother!"
"That's Vorbis," said Brother, standing up. "Shall I leave you here?"
"Yes, there's still some melon. I mean, loaf."
Brother wandered out into the dusk. Vorbis was sitting on a bench under a tree, as still as a statue in the shadows. Certainty, Brother thought. I used to be certain. Now I'm not so sure.
Ah, Brother, you will accompany me on a little stroll. We will take the evening air.
Yes, Lord.
You have enjoyed your visit to Ephib?
Vorbis seldom asked a question if a statement would do.
It has been interesting.
Vorbis put one hand on Brother's shoulder and used the other to haul himself up on his staff.
And what do you think of it?
He asked. They have many gods, and they don't pay them much attention, said Brother, and they search for ignorance.
And they find it in abundance, be sure of that, said Vorbis.
He pointed his staff into the night.
Let us walk, he said.
There was the sound of laughter somewhere in the darkness and the clatter of pans. The scent of evening opening flowers hung thickly in the air. The stored heat of the daytime radiating from the stones made the night seem like a fragrant soup.
Ephib looks to the sea, said Vorbis after a while.
You see the way it is built, all on the slope of a hill facing the sea? But the sea is mutable.
Nothing lasting comes from the sea. Whereas our dear citadel looks towards the high desert. And what do we see there?
Instinctively, Brother turned and looked over the rooftops to the black bulk of the desert against the sky.
I saw a flash of light, he said. And again, on the slope.
Ah, the light of truth, said Vorbis. So let us go forth to meet it. Take me to the entrance of the labyrinth, Brother. You know the way.
My lord, said Brother.
Yes, Brother.
I would like to ask you a question.
Do so.
What happened to Brother Murdoch? There was the merest suggestion of hesitation in the rhythm of Vorbis's stick on the cobbles. Then the exquisitor said,
Truth, good brother, is like the light. Do you know about light?
It comes from the sun and the moon and stars.
And candles, and lamps, and so on, said Vorbis, nodding. Of course, but there is another kind of light, a light that fills even the darkest of places. This has to be, for if this meta-light did not exist, how could darkness be seen?
Brother said nothing. This sounded too much like philosophy.
And so it is with truth, said Vorbis. There are some things which appear to be the truth, which have all the hallmarks of truth, but which are not the real truth. The real truth must sometimes be protected by a labyrinth of lies.
He turned to Brother.
Do you understand me?
No, Lord Vorbis.
I mean, that which appears to our senses is not the fundamental truth. Things that are seen and heard and done by the flesh are mere shadows of a deeper reality. This is what you must understand as you progress in the church.
But at the moment, Lord, I know only the trivial truth, the truth available on the outside, said Brother.
He felt as though he was at the edge of a pit.
That is how we all begin, said Vorbis kindly.
So, did the Ephebians kill Brother Murdoch?
Brother persisted. Now he was inching out over the darkness.
I am telling you that in the deepest sense of the truth, and they did, by their failure to embrace his words, by their intransigence, they surely killed him. But in the trivial sense of the truth, said Brother, picking every word with the care an inquisitor might give to his patient in the depths of the citadel, in the trivial sense, Brother Murdoch died, did he not, in Omnia, because he had not died in Ephib, had been merely mocked, but it was feared that others in the church might not understand the deeper truth, and thus it was put about that the Ephebians had killed him, in the trivial sense, thus giving you and those who saw the truth of the evil of Ephib due cause to launch a just retaliation.
They walked past a fountain. The deacon's steel-shod staff clicked in the night.
"I see a great future for you in the church," said Vorbis eventually. "The time of the eighth prophet is coming, a time of expansion and great opportunity for those true in the service of Om."
Brother looked into the pit. If Vorbis was right and there was a kind of light that made darkness visible, then down there was its opposite, the darkness where no light could ever reach, darkness that blackened light. He thought of blind Didactylos and his empty lantern. He heard himself say, "And with people like the Ephebians, there is no truce. No treaty can be held binding if it is between people like the Ephebians and those who follow a deeper truth." Vorbis nodded. "When the great God is with us," he said, "who can stand against us? You impress me, brother." There was more laughter in the darkness and the twang of stringed instruments.
"A feast," sneered Vorbis. "The tyrant invited us to a feast. I sent some of the party, of course. Even their generals are in there. They think themselves safe behind their labyrinth, as a tortoise thinks itself safe in its shell, not realizing it is a prison. Onward."
The inner wall of the labyrinth loomed out of the darkness. Brother leaned against it. From far above came the chink of metal on metal as a sentry went on his rounds. The gateway to the labyrinth was wide open. The Ephebians had never seen the point of stopping people entering. Up a short side tunnel, the guide for the first sixth of the way slumbered on a bench, a candle guttering beside him. Above his alcove hung the bronze bell that would-be traversers of the maze used to summon him. Brother slipped past.
"Brother?"
"Yes, Lord?"
"Lead the way through the labyrinth. I know you can."
"Lord, this is an order, brother," said Vorbis pleasantly. There is no hope for it, Brother thought. It is an order.
"Then tread where I tread, Lord," he whispered. "Not more than one step behind me." "Yes, brother." "If I step around a place on the floor for no reason, you step around it too." "Yes, brother."
Brother thought, perhaps I could do it wrong. "No, I took vows and things. You can't just disobey. The whole world ends if you start thinking like that." He let his sleeping mind take control. The way through the labyrinth unrolled in his head like a glowing wire. Diagonally forward and right 3.5 paces and left 63 paces. Pause 2 seconds where a steely swish in the darkness suggested that one of the guardians had devised something that won him a prize. And up 3 steps. "I could run forward," he thought. "I could hide and he'd walk into one of the pits. Or a deadfall or something, and then I could sneak back to my room and who would ever know?" I would. Forward 9 paces, and right 1 pace, and forward 19 paces, and left 2 paces. There was a light ahead. Not the occasional white glow of moonlight from the slits in the roof, but yellow lamplight dimming and brightening as its owner came nearer.
"Someone's coming," he whispered. "It must be one of the guides."
Vorbis had vanished. Brother hovered uncertainly in the passageway as the light bobbed nearer. An elderly voice said,
"That you, number 4?
The light came round a corner. It half illuminated an old man who walked up to Brother and raised the candle to his face.
"Where's number 4?
He said, peering around Brother. A figure appeared behind the man from out of a side passage. Brother had the briefest glimpse of Vorbis, his face strangely peaceful, as he gripped the head of his staff, twisted and pulled. Sharp metal glittered for a moment in the candlelight. Then the light went out. Vorbis's voice said,
"Take the lead again."
Trembling, Brother obeyed. He felt the soft flesh of an outflung arm under his sandal for a moment. The pit, he thought. Look into Vorbis's eyes and there's the pit. And I'm in it with him. I've got to remember about fundamental truth. No more guides were patrolling the labyrinth. After a mere 1,000,000 years, the night air blew cool on his face and Brother stepped out under the stars.
"Well done. Can you remember the way to the gate?"
"Yes, Lord Vorbis." The deacon pulled his hood over his face.
"Carry on."
There were a few torches lighting the streets, but Ephib was not a city that stayed awake in darkness. A couple of passers-by paid them no attention.
"They guard their harbour,"
said Vorbis conversationally. "But the way to the desert. Everyone knows that no one can cross the desert. I am sure you know that, brother. But now I suspect that what I know is not the truth," said brother.
"Quite so. Ah, the gate. I believe it had two guards yesterday."
"I saw two.
And now it is night, and the gate is shut, but there will be a watchman. Wait here."
Vorbis disappeared into the gloom. After a while, there was a muffled conversation. Brother stared straight ahead of him. The conversation was followed by muffled silence. After a while, Brother started to count to himself. "After 10, I'll go back. Another 10, then. All right, make it 30. And then I'll...
Ah, Brother, let us go."
Brother swallowed his heart again and turned slowly. "I did not hear you, my lord," he managed.
"I walk softly.
Is there a watchman?"
"Not now. Come, help me with the bolts."
A small wicket gate was set into the main gate. Brother, his mind numb with hatred, shoved the bolts aside with the heel of his hand. The door opened with barely a creak. Outside, there was the occasional light of a distant farm and crowding darkness. Then the darkness poured in. "Hierarchy," Vorbis said later. "The Ephebians didn't think in terms of hierarchies. No army could cross the desert, but maybe a small army could get a quarter of the way and leave a cache of water, and do that several times. And another small army could use part of that cache to go further, maybe reach halfway, and leave a cache. And another small army..." It had taken months. A third of the men had died of heat and dehydration and wild animals and worse things, the worst things that the desert held. You had to have a mind like Vorbis's to plan it, and plan it early. Men were already dying in the desert before Brother Murdoch went to preach. There was already a beaten track when the Omnian fleet burned in the bay before Ephib. You had to have a mind like Vorbis's to plan your retaliation before your attack. It was over in less than an hour. The fundamental truth was that the handful of Ephebian guards in the palace had no chance at all.